Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another week of We Talk Productions, one of the few black radio networks that sports solutions to issues in the black community, presents Black Urban America. All you folks that are listening by tapping the link or by laptops, if you have a comment or question, you may dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. The lineup is Black Urban America on Tuesdays. I'm your host, Kenny Jones, with the co-host, Michonne Williams. On Wednesday, we have the Cunyans with Michonne. On Thursday, we have the Port of Harlem Magazine with Mr. Wayne A. Young. And finish up the week, we have Provocative Thought with Call to Speed. On Saturday. And all shows begin at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight, we have a very disturbing topic this evening. Let me mention some communities. Harlem, Bed-Stuy, Chocolate Cities, communities in L.A., the ATL. They all have one thing in common. They all been gentrified. What is gentrification? It is the process whereby the character of a poor urban area is changed by wealthier people. And to discuss this topic this evening, we have a brother from North Carolina out of the studio, at the 9.18.9 Studio Gallery. He's an artist and from Miles of Design, Mr. John Trey Miles the Third. Good evening, sir. Welcome to Black Urban America. How are you?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you all having me tonight.
Good, good. Thank you for coming on the show. I've been a part of gentrification. It is a very disturbing sight to be. Tell me, can you explain some of the effects that are caused by gentrification?
Well, one of the main things is displacement of our brethren. I mean, you know, like you said, when you said the definition, it's essentially when the wealthy prey upon an existing, say, we'll just say neighborhood or area, and then they essentially displace the individuals who live there, and with many cases, no type of solution as to where they're going to live once they're displaced. So, yeah, it's a terrible thing.
You know, I just want to know, why would another group will come into another community and take it over?
Money. Money is the root of it, from my, you know, in my opinion. And here in Charlotte, North Carolina, I mean, it is like bad. I mean, it's like every other, what we used to call traditional black neighborhood, is in either in the process of gentrification or being gentrified or has already been gentrified. I mean, I would say, I think it was about 15, 20 years ago when our first black mayor said, get ready, anything within a 15-mile radius of downtown is going to change. A lot of people just didn't get what he was saying, but he was trying to forewarn us way back then, and a lot of people just didn't understand what he was getting at way back then.
Okay. Now, 20 years ago, was this mayor black?
Yes, our first black mayor, and it just goes to show you, a lot of times, you know, even though he was, you know, in a position of power, a lot of times, you know, his hands, you know, may be tied because, you know, Charlotte, you know, was at the time especially, was up and coming growing city. You know, it's the second largest banking as far as the United States is concerned, at least, you know, when you're talking about all of the headquarters of, you know, Bank of America and Wells Fargo and all these big time people who are you know stationed out of downtown Charlotte. So he knew way back then, based off of the way that the city council and the way that I guess the councils and the groups and stuff were meeting, like, if we're going to continue this route, if we're going to be on top of this, and this, we're going to have to make this happen, and it can't look a certain way downtown anymore if we're going to get these people in. And that's, of course, getting the, hate to say it, the black folk out, because they got to, you know, look a certain way in order to convince, you know, some of these big-time companies to come to Charlotte at the time.
You know, my thinking is you have blacks in power in these neighborhoods or towns or cities. Mm. And they know it's coming. It's not like they're taken by surprise. Mm-hmm. What is the difficulty of stopping it?
Well, one thing is, like, for instance, he mentioned it. I think I first heard about, you know, the concept of anything that was going to be within a 15-mile radius of downtown was going to get some change. You know, by the time you hear about it, it's already too late. So even in his situation, the ball has already been going down the hill. And in his, you know, in his position, you know, he can kind of try to put the word out there, let people know this, that, and the other, but, you know, you get, you know, Mom, Paul pass on, you know, they may not have shared the information with their children may not have shared it with them, and by the time it gets to us and by the time you start hearing about it in 2020, the ball has already been rolling for 20 years. I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, stop that avalanche of that, you know, I think of like those cartoons when you see the snowball rolling down the hill and all the people in it. You can get in front of that ball if you want to, but you're just going to get sucked up and, you know, it's just going to keep rolling. It's, you know, it takes like that Superman type of character to bust that ball apart, and we just haven't found that Superman or that Superman-like ability to stop that ball once it has started rolling, because the deals, they've already been made at that point, all of the backdoor handshakes, you know, the greasing of palms, you know, that stuff has, you know, been done years and years prior to us even knowing about it. So it's important that, you know, we do the best we can to go to those city council meetings, try to be a part of, you know, these meetings that, you know, a lot of times they don't even tell us about and so forth. And like I said, a lot of times you get to the meetings, they've already made their, you know, the decision anyway. They're just going through the meetings, you know, for formalities.
You know, go ahead, Ms. Sean. I ask the next
question. I have a question.
A little later, because when I discuss this topic, I get a little angry because I see it with my own eyes. So go ahead, Ms. Sean. Ask your question.
In Charlotte, in that area, they had dug up graves for new developments.
Well, I've heard that, and I believe you're talking about over there in the Double Oaks area where it used to I've heard it was at one point a graveyard, and I even heard a landfill at one point and then kind of done it. So I can't speak directly, but I have heard that before. So, yes, I have heard it. I don't have any, you know, concrete evidence of it and so
okay,
forth.
Okay,
I have
read
heard
it
that
in
before.
An article. I did get it from an article that I had read before. Okay. What is the difference between gentrification and revitalization?
In my opinion, the main difference is with gentrification, it's targeting, you know, I guess you would say lower income areas, then they, you know, quote unquote, revitalize in the area. But then what they do is you're physically being displaced. So it's like, you know, yeah, you ain't got no choice. You got to get the HF out of here type of thing. Almost kind of like the whole urban renewal. You know, you just don't have a whole lot of choice. Whereas with what you said before, it's not. I guess it's just not quite the same because you're not forced out. And that's just my take on it. I mean, it may be something totally different, but that's my take on it. That's the way I see it as far as the differences.
You're forced out. You're forced out when you can't pay the high rents. You're forced out when they might say, oh, you know, you might keep your rent the same for 2 years. And after 2 years, rent
is going to go up $1,000.
Triple.
Right. Man, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you're right. You're right. It's forced out. Yeah, it's just forced out over a longer period of time in some cases or in a different manner. I agree totally because, oh, man, I've seen that so many times. And some of the tricks and the little sneaky things they do is just, you know, I mean, it's appalling some of the things that they will do in order to pull the wool over our eyes. It's crazy.
Okay, I want to know, how are they attaining these properties?
Okay,
are people selling them to us, back taxes, what?
In some cases, yes. Like, for instance, I'm from Hidden Valley neighborhood. We call it the Valley. I don't know if you saw the documentary years ago. But anyway, so that Hidden Valley, we're approximately about 10, I would say maybe about 10 miles from downtown, and we're also, you know, right on the, you know, the line for the light rail. So this neighborhood right now is a melting pot for gentrification. One thing that they're doing, we have a lot of the homeowners that used to be homeowners. They're deceased now, or the elderly that do own the homes and have not sold out to the LLCs at this point. What they'll do is they'll get the property values raised, so the tax values and the property values end up going up, but they have fixed incomes. So they start to the LLCs will buy up all as many houses as they can, and then they'll have their little sister companies come in and essentially buy the houses for like three times what they're worth. So once they purchase those houses at the 200-300% of what the value of the home is, now the other homes in the immediate area's tax values start to rise up. So as those tax values rise up over the years, a lot of the elderly that do own the homes in the neighborhood now are not able to afford the taxes because they're on fixed income. So that's just one example that I've seen and I know of personally where individuals have had issues keeping their homes and they kind of sneak the homes from up under them. But like you said, you do have people say, oh, we'll buy for cash, you know, we'll offer you $80,000 for your house. They know that they paid it off at $70,000. So, you know, some people are just naive enough to not know that $10,000 that they're getting is not going to help them a lot because, I mean, where are you going to find an $80,000 home at? But some of it is just, you know, not being educated, but a lot of it's just underhanded, sneaky, you know, this nasty type of political mess.
Hey, I just want to add this. I just want to add this. A lot of black politicians, I know this for a fact, and I see it.
I know
a lot of black politicians are in on the skim scam.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh man, and I ain't gonna call no names out, but there's some of them out there. That,
I'm not afraid.
They own a bunch of the house. They own a bunch of
the name.
Yeah, I know.
You see New Jersey. Allow these folks to come in. I'm not gonna name the culture. They got curls in their hair, and they're buying all the black. Mm-hmm. All the properties in this black neighborhood.
Yeah.
And he knew about it because I was sitting right there. I was in awe, and like next thing you know, in the next 5 years, people are gone.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're right. You're right. I've seen it too.
How can gentrification be stopped?
Man.
They can't. Once they got that money in the neighborhood, it's done.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what this brother from California said, named J.T. Loughlin. Mm-hmm. Once you see the bulldozers, once you see the contractors, it's over. You can't stop.
You know what? I got
like your brother Miles.
I'll go.
This been the plan for 20 years.
I'll take that a step further, and I'm glad you said it because I didn't want to be the negative, you know, come on here and be the negative person saying that I didn't think there was a true way to stop it. I think our best bet is to educate ourselves and the people who understand it like ourselves to educate the younger folk. I mean, I talk to my 16-year-old daughter about it all the time, so at least she understands it. I didn't know what the term gentrification meant probably until I was 27, 28 years old, because that's not just what they teach you in school. Yeah, so, you know, I think it's important that we just, you know, we have to, you know, educate ourselves. But like you said, I would say before the bulldozers, if you start seeing a Starbucks, you know, you in the hood, and you see a Starbucks go up within about 10 miles, or Publix, or some kind of Whole Foods store, your area might be gentrified.
Hey, I got a better one. Once you start seeing police presence, once you see other cultures walking their poodles, you're done.
They're poodles instead of their pit bulls. Poodles instead of pit bulls, yeah.
I'm only sharing what I have seen, witnessed, and be a part of. And I'm not, it sounds like in a joke, but it's not a joke, because that's how homelessness increase.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, displacement. And my thing is, you said money. Like, but you see, I won't go on the little root causes, and people go get angry. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
The crime, the gangs, the shooting, the drugs bring the property value down, make it easier for other businesses or dummy corporations to come buy these properties. And the next thing you know, you wake up one day and, like, you have to move, like, within 90 days or 6 months or a year, you know. And half of this, I said 50% of it, we're bringing on ourselves. We're bringing on ourselves because we don't take care of our neighborhoods or communities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not all low-income neighborhoods or black communities are under this thing. But, you know, I got to say, most of our communities in urban areas, have these issues, which make it easier for the politicians to make these deals with these businesses to push us out and bring in other cultures.
Right. I'll even add on to that to say that in some, I'm going to say many cases, in many cases, it was planned that way. So they have a so for instance, here in Charlotte, I'll just use, you know, since, you know, I got firsthand knowledge. We have areas in here in Charlotte that literally were not necessarily what you would call a poverty area. It wasn't necessarily already run down, but what, you know, what these LLCs and these politicians and so forth, they do, they know that they want the area to look a certain way. But again, we got the money factor into it. So they'll literally buy up houses, but they want to buy multiple houses. So they will run the property value down on purpose. So they'll start to place individuals that they feel or have a feeling, due to statistics, data, whatever you want to call it, that will start to run the area down. So then they can go and buy the houses for even cheaper, so they can get multiple houses. And when I say multiple, I'm talking about 20, 30, 40 houses within a neighborhood that has 100. So now they have a stronghold on a chokehold. You say a chokehold on the neighborhood. So now they got that chokehold on the neighborhood, and they've gotten these houses for super cheap. What do they do then? Okay, I'm going to bide my time. I got 8 other businesses, so when it's time, I'm going to run these folk out. I'm going to renovate the property, and then I'm going to charge 3 times the amount when this basketball team gets here, or when this bank gets here 10 years from here, or when this hockey team or baseball team gets here. And, I mean, it's like, you know, they're methodical, thinking stuff out, you know, 20 years ahead, when we're, you know, struggling trying to think 2 years ahead.
Yeah, that happened in downtown Brooklyn near the Barclays Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like,
yeah, I heard about
15 years ago, you know, it looked different what it looks now. Why can't the rich, like, there's a thing that is said among young folks, stay in your lane. Why the rich can't just stay in the suburbs and in their mansions and everything? Why they got to come in our neighborhoods with folks calling the hood. Why they got to come in our neighborhoods and create havoc? Or like, okay, you know, my great grandfather, you know, told me about this community. Let's work together, try to, like you said, Rishon said, revitalize. You know, which means a whole word, but revitalize where everybody wins.
Man, all I know is that, like, here in the QC in Charlotte, North Carolina, white flight, flight of the white, whatever you want to call it, man, you have a neighborhood that was all white, then a few brown spots or color spots start moving into the area, then, you know, all of the non-color spots start to leave. But as soon as it starts to become, back nice, or it never got bad, but it ends up continuing to be nice, then they come back and want to move right back. You know, I'm like, hey, you moved out because you didn't like us, and now you want to kick us out and move back in. Same thing with downtown Charlotte. At one point, downtown Charlotte was, I mean, other than a couple little urban, stores that sold, bomber jackets and triple fat gooses, if you remember them from back in the day, and starter jackets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you didn't go to downtown other than to go to the darn transit to catch the city bus or to get your transfers on the city bus. And then when the banks started coming in, it was like, well, dang, we can't convince these banks to come in and all these high-end people to come in if it looks like this down here, because that's where, I hate to say it, but that's where all our homeless were at the time. So even the homeless got displaced to the outskirts. And then the whites all of a sudden start moving back in. You go downtown now, man, it's $3,000 a month condos on every corner, and restaurants, sell $150 steaks. So, and this is within a 20-year span? It's crazy. And like you said, they move out to the suburbs, and now they're moving back in the city, and then now to the suburbs, and the black folks, they ain't going to have nowhere to move because affordable housing ain't too affordable anymore.
Right. 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 And the thing that the issue that I have is our communities are targeted. Our communities are targeted. And it's just, like, this is what just popped in my mind. Is gentrification a part of racism?
I would have to say yes. I would have to definitely say yes. I think that there's too many correlations to the two and things that have gone on.
We got Chinatowns in New York, and they don't gentrify the Middle Easterners neighborhoods. They don't gentrify Asian communities. Why? Why target black neighborhoods versus other communities? I mean, Chinatowns all over the country. It's like prosperous locales, Indian communities are in prosperous locales, just as black neighborhoods. Why come to our communities instead of other communities? Why not use them strategies on other communities? Why come to our community? It's because we don't have a voice. I don't know. I don't hear other groups complain of gentrification.
Right. That's a good question. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I wonder if some of these other groups of people, if they may have greased certain palms before they got there. You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, it's a lot of stuff, backdoor stuff that happens. I'm just wondering if there's been backdoor stuff that's happened that kind of gives them a safety zone or whatever. I don't know. I just think you're exactly right. It has to be something, because like you said, in some cases, they're on the exact same train line or the exact same path or the neighborhood right beside the neighborhood that got tore down, and they essentially aren't even affected.
Yeah. Yeah. Good
question.
It ain't nothing to make $100 million, but
needs it. Oh, we got a caller.
Okay.
We got a caller here. Hold on. 4756. You're on the line. Welcome to Black Earth America.
Yeah, greetings. I'm calling you from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I was just enjoying the conversation.
Welcome to New Orleans. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome to New Orleans. What's up?
Yeah. I was just enjoying the conversation on gentrification, and it's happening everywhere. In New Orleans, you know, that's been occurring ever since Hurricane Katrina.
I heard.
Right.
I had a lot of talk to New Orleans. And they'll force out the state.
I look at the term gentrification as just a fancy word for what's always been going on, and that's just the replacement of people that white people's pleasure. You know, so when we look at the whole United States, when it was created, it was displacing people. And you know, it's something that is a part of their relationship with non-white people, moving people at their pleasure. What I think about Harlem and the way Harlem became a black Mecca was that black people systematically moved into Harlem. That story is the story we ever learned about Harlem
in the late 1800s, to be exact.
You know, so... It's interesting how when the whites come into these areas, services come into those areas and all the amenities and stuff like that, you know. And also the takeover of the local school system comes along with gentrification. Because whites didn't need a school.
Right.
Yeah, whites didn't need a school to put their children in. So when you see the politics in cities about charter schools, so on and so forth. Right behind it is a gentrification plan that whites have for those areas there. So New Orleans schools are 100% charter. It's the only district in the nation where all of the schools are charter. You have a school board.
Wow.
The school board issues the charter to the different schools, but it does not get involved. It does not, you know, and so it's all type of things go along with it.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's crazy. Wow, I didn't realize it was 100% charter at this point.
100%, yeah.
That's,
wow.
That's crazy. I was a school teacher for 17 years, and you know, I was bused when I was a child, you know, across, you know, middle school and high school, you know, 35, 40 minutes, you know, on the other side of town to try to so-called, you know, keep the schools, you know, so many blacks versus white at a school, but this is about to be a mess if this charter stuff goes through. What you're going to find is you're going to see public schools that are going to be just saturated with poverty because they're not going to get any type of public support, and then the charter schools are going to get all the head child funds.
And you're going to see more of a disappearance of black teachers. Because white teachers who come into these cities to live, they're going to be getting these jobs.
Right.
With no certification and qualification.
Right. And I think you're going to also see black teachers leave because in many cases, at least from what I've seen at the charter schools around this area, is that they pay more money. So the public schools funding is going to deplete. And they're not going to be able to, you know, you're already getting paid, you know, like pennies, and then now you're going to be getting potentially even less funding, so you're going to see a lot of good teachers potentially leave also to go to the charter schools that are black. So it's a lose-lose for any of our black and brown students to get stuck in the public school system.
Right.
Michonne, you got a question?
Yes, I do. I think one of the reasons when they gentrify communities And they push people out because new developments are always profit-driven. They're not community-driven.
True. True that.
So I do think that is one of the reasons. And another thing is what is wrong with having a healthy, vibrant neighborhood? Because there's a lot of communities that are Black that are healthy and vibrant. But then there are, they have communities that aren't. Because I know, like, there are a lot of communities that I was in Chicago. Especially on the west side, I saw a lot of gentrification on the west side because the west side is right beside downtown Chicago.
I just want to say this. How come white folks think they're the only ones that can improve communities? How come they think they're the only ones that could come in the environment, change the whole structure, change the whole demographics? How come they think they're the only ones that can improve communities? If we had the
I don't even think we can improve our own communities.
They think they're the only ones. I lived in Cicero, Illinois. I was six blocks from the west side of Chicago. And Cicero is controlled by the Italians. There were, it was mostly Mexican. And what the Mexicans did in Cicero was they came in quietly, bought up a lot of property. They even put their money together and bought up a lot of property. They opened their own stores. I mean, from grocery stores, clothing stores, to everything. And they kept their money, they shopped at their own stores. When I would go to a regular grocery store, like in Chicago, they have like Jewels is one of them. When you go in that store, you didn't see any Mexicans in there. Because they were in their own grocery stores, shopping at their own stores. And they kept their neighborhood really nice. Yards were nice. They were clean. There were no paper outside. But I could walk six blocks because I was only six blocks away from Chicago. All you did is cross the street on Roosevelt. One side of the street was Cicero. The other side was the west side of Chicago. Totally different ballgame. One side of the street, you see prostitutes, panhandle, garbage everywhere. It looked horrible. And the police would be sitting right there on the corner. So if somebody on the Chicago side went across that street and that crazy, they was ready for them. So
Black people need to
take care of their own.
Yeah, we do. But I think one of the issues is like, I mean, the type of crap that I'm seeing is like literally, it's like they're not trying to necessarily come in and make the community better. They're coming in and just destroying the community, period. You're getting displaced, and then they're just putting up another community so somebody for profit, so someone can profit off of it. So it's not even like, yeah, well, we're going to come in here, and we're gonna put sidewalks on both sides. We're going to put a park over here. We're going to do this. Nah, they like, nah, we about to just straight up, y'all got to go, and we about to tear all of these, you know, $1,200 houses down or 1,200 square foot houses down. We about to put duplexes and condos on this property. So it's, you know, it's not even that they're trying to build up or think that they can make the community better. They just straight up destroying the communities altogether. You know, they did that, you know, back in the 1940s.
Black communities and adding to theirs. Okay, in your area, do they have anything? Because I know a lot of other areas, a lot that I know of, I know people who are actively buying, who are Black, buying up these abandoned houses and houses look like shacks and fixing them up.
Yeah, you have some of them. You have some people doing that, but like King said, that some of them are those politicians that got that information 15 years ago and got up under the radar and was able to kind of, you know, get them in that kind of, I hate to say it, but in with the other folk, you know, trying to, you know, make profit off of it. But we do have individuals just trying to do that. But, you know, by the time you find out that those houses are even available, they've already been snatched up. I mean, Castro. We had a black investor that was.
Black people need to start being forward thinking. Like, you know.
Yeah, 20 years forward thinking. That's the difference.
For several generations. You
okay,
know,
okay,
exactly. And that's
some black people only plan for the about Harlem.
Right, we plan for 2 years. They plan for 20, 30 years. That's the difference.
They plan for 2 and 3 generations, actually.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're
Yeah, the grandkids, whereas, we're so much more short-sighted. And that's been the way it has been for years now. Generations now.
So we as black people need to change our mindset.
Right. And
do things differently
educating.
Because what we're doing has not been working for us.
No. I'd agree on that one too.
But if we can't change our mindset if we don't know. In the early 90s in Harlem, our first black man our only black man, the Honorable David Dinkins, right, had a housing plan. He was going to build affordable housing, affordable condos for working, low-income folks and everything. And he had it beautifully laid out. He lost the election to Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani took that same plan from David Dinkins and turned it into high-end condos, flats, townhomes, and you talk about digging up graves. They destroyed the only black they found artifacts of buried black folks from the 1800s and everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they did with it. So it's like when we try to do something, we know something's going to happen. Here comes a roadblock. In this case, the roadblock was Giuliani, which everyone knows.
Yeah, and that happens often.
What's the name, boy? Bill Trump's boy.
Yeah, right.
And I'm talking about the early 90s. I'm not talking about 2000. I'm not talking about the. I'm talking about the early 90s. And I mean, like David Dinkins had community policing. You know, I mean, he had a great plan. Program for people to start their own business, training programs or what have you. And it all went up in smoke in one night.
Yeah. Here in Charlotte, we had an old neighborhood actually called Brooklyn. It was a community downtown for about, four or five, street blocks. I don't think of blocks per se because I'm down here from the South, but, the neighborhood essentially thrived for, decades. I'm talking about the black doctors. That's where all the blacks, essentially lived. Doctors, schools, stores. And it was literally a mini black Wall Street, per se. I mean, that was, black owned, just what we're talking about. This is what we need. But again, the city essentially came in and decided, we're going to put this highway coming straight through the neighborhood. And, you can get out there if you want to. You got to think, back in the 1920s and 30s, you get out there if you want to and try to, make a chain, arm chains to stop the bulldozers, and they just going to shoot you in, and that's going to be your grave from that. So they essentially promised the community that they were going to build a better community somewhere else in the city, but that never happened. That whole 40 acres and a mule concept, they never got it, and that's essentially how a lot of the black neighborhoods, outside of the downtown area started here in Charlotte in the 60s and so forth, right after Brooklyn was essentially demolished. So they've been systematically doing this forever. Like someone said, I think the young man said, you come over to the United States and, they displaced, try to displace the whole country. Say, oh, no, y'all, this is ours now, and like it's cool. It's their birthright in their own eyes.
Michonne brought up a point a few minutes ago, and I just want to add this question to it. Is there any way, and I'm talking about regular black community, is there any way we can improve our communities without gentrification? Or the term that Bichon brought up, revitalization.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a lot of communities that are doing that. Again, I just think the big issue is when your city has a 20-year plan because, again, they're trying to bring in a second NBA team, and in order to do so, they have to promise this person this, and this. And if that promise was this land where this neighborhood has been thriving, nothing wrong with it or whatever, is in their way, then they're going to do whatever they can do. They're going to bend the rules. They're going to change the rules. They're going to do whatever they can in their power to legally run you out. So it's important for us to understand our rights, to understand what, you know, they can and can't do, you know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we have to be educated enough to know that end of it. And also we have to be, you know, savvy enough to understand that, again, they plan stuff decades out. You know, a lot of times, you know, the same people that were, you know, in the neighborhood now weren't here 20 years ago. So the people here might have knew about 20 years ago, but they're not even here now to pass on that information. So we just don't know. And it's unfortunate.
You brought up some interest. We have to be actively involved in our local politics.
Yes.
But like I said,
have to.
Early on, these black politicians are part of it. They are a part of it. They let them in. They open up the door and welcome. And like this brother told me, a few years ago, we'll talk about this. And he said, you know what? Good for him. Good for us.
Mm.
Maybe we'll behave better. You know, who wants to live in a community with gunplay? Who want to live in a community with run-down property? Who wants to live in a community with neighborhoods that don't look right, don't look nice? Just because you live in a low-income area doesn't mean that you have to look impoverished, what he said. How you feel about that statement?
Mm.
It's all of us.
I got my opinion on it, but then he goes on
to blame black professionals, black business owners, for moving out of the community and all that's left behind people that are lacking.
So he's blaming people for finally getting to where they, you know, have been trying to get, and blaming them for not staying.
Blaming them for not staying to continue the revitalization of the community, playing their part, because they did become black professionals on their own. They did that. Let me tell you something. The traditional black neighborhood I know of, we had a black pharmacist, we had a couple black business owners. You live next door to the black councilman. You live around the corner from a couple black teachers. And you had your black low-income families all mixed in. But we were a black community. Then you talk about white flight. But then the crack era come, we had black professional flight.
That's a good point. Black professional flight. Well, that's a good point, too. I mean, why would they stay?
Because I have an aunt in Chicago. Her husband was a business owner. She had a really good job. They owned an apartment building. They also lived in an apartment building and rented out the rest. And she got robbed. My aunt got robbed twice in front of her house, leaving out the door in the morning to go to work. So why would somebody in their right mind, she never left
put
her neighborhood because she liked her neighborhood, but I wouldn't have stayed, personally.
Mm.
I'd have been gone.
Yeah.
I probably would have kept my building, just rented out the one I was in, and I would have probably brought something else.
You would have left the resource.
There's no way I would stay in a neighborhood like that. Now, I wouldn't have a problem buying property in that neighborhood and fixing it up and renting it out, but I'm not going to personally live there. Mm-hmm. And that's just me.
Yeah, and that makes logical sense.
I mean, I work hard. I go to work. I make my money. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to make it to give it to somebody who's not doing nothing, waiting to see who they can rob next. I might be that next person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're doing worse than robbing people. They're killing them, too. So, no, I'm not going to stay. And if the neighborhood go down, it'll just go down because my life's going to come first and my family's.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then my mom brought up a good point.
To be safer.
Yeah, that makes sense. A lot of people, and that's what a lot of people have done it. They move out, you know, just for that reason, which makes perfect sense. My mom.
And don't forget another reason, the school system in our communities are not that good. And black folks see an opportunity. And a major reason why I read a year ago, a major reason why black folks move out of the black traditional neighborhoods is because of the school system, and they want that kids to get a good education. So, like the brother from New Orleans said, that school, and see, what gentrification brings is new resources. Like the high school I went to was all black. Now I hear it's mixed. With Jews, it's mixed with Indians. So it's mixed. It's not 100% black no more. And so your school system reflects. And now it's become an academic school. The school system reflects who is living in the neighborhood.
Now, I know here in Charlotte, schools get a large portion of their funding based off of the tax value of the area it's in. So that kind of like that 15-mile radius. So based off the tax value of the area determines how much money the school gets. Now, that's not the only pot that the money comes from, but that's where a lot of the money comes from. So naturally, if you're in a neighborhood where we'll just say the house's average price is $100,000, and then you're in a neighborhood where the houses are $300,000, then the school that is closer to the neighborhood with the $300,000 houses gets more funding towards the school itself. So that's an automatic way to just, you know, keep one school down versus another one because they don't get equal funding across the board. So that's why a lot of times one school appears to be having issues and the other don't. Because, I worked, 17 years at a predominantly black high school, and that was the exact same thing that we dealt with. It was in the black community. I mean, the average house was a 1,200-square-foot house that cost $120,000. But then the high school I went to, you got – million-dollar mansions. So they get more money to go towards funding, which it seems like it's ass backwards.
You know, there's a debate going on among thinkers. There's an argument going on. It said that gentrification does not cause displacement. What do you think about that argument?
I would say it's just the opposite. I can't speak for Atlanta or New York or New Orleans or Chicago, but I can speak for Charlotte that at the rate this gentrification is going and the whole affordable housing concept, affordable housing is based off of the average cost of a house. So if all of these areas that are being gentrified, the ones that aren't being gentrified are continuously going up and up in value to a point where the affordable housing is not even affordable. And what's happening now is you're starting to see the individuals who can't, you're starting to see that the lower income bracket just can't afford to live in Charlotte, period. So they're having to move towards the outskirts of Charlotte now and just to, to be able to have a living. So you're starting to systematically see, a whole economic branch of, people that are being displaced. And I know that's not the right terminology, but we're seeing a whole group of people that don't have anywhere to live in Charlotte. They either end up homeless or they have to move to the outskirts because, again, what was affordable 10 years ago is not affordable now. They call it affordable housing, but, you know, $1,300 of, you know, a month isn't affordable for someone who's still making $7.25 an hour because that's
right.
where our minimum wage has been stuck for the last 20 years, it seems.
Right. And let me also, you know, they're moving us on the outskirts. And like for example, in the state of New York, right, the people that lived in the Bronx for like 3 generations, Harlem for 4 or 5 generations, Bed Stuy for 4 or 5 generations. Now of moving to areas that used to be known as white, like Rochester, New York.
Right.
There weren't no black folks in Rochester, New York.
There weren't no black folks in Rochester. I think my godfather was the only one.
In Philadelphia. Yeah. You know how long North Philadelphia had belonged to black folks? Like 1700s into 1700s.
Yeah.
And you go to North Philly now. The only black folks you see there is ones that can afford it. Now they live in what they call Northeast Philadelphia, where it used to be all white. It's just like they switch.
They're switching. Yeah, role reversal. Switch. Y'all go out there in the country.
And now, displacements bring on a lot of other issues. Transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable, because now you're going into a neighborhood where the prices is already high and they're not coming down off their prices. Now here come another issue: homelessness, affordable housing. You know, so it brings on a whole bunch of new issues. Yes.
It's like a domino effect.
Say what?
No, I say it's like a domino effect. Yeah.
Right. And I just hope that the new areas that we move to, I hope that we learn our lessons. And I hope that, like what Michonne said earlier, I hope we start buying property or create groups where you can buy property so it won't happen again. But if it happened once,
circle.
And bring these black business owners to start businesses in these black neighborhoods and these new black towns.
Yeah, we need more economical power. That's one thing I do agree with. Some of our mega folks, like, you know, we need more economic power to make some changes, you know, to really make some big changes happen.
Yeah.
Where that comes from, you know, how you organize that, I don't know, but it definitely
sacrifice.
Needs to happen.
Sacrifice.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there's going to have to be some serious sacrifice.
It's like, especially the millennials, you know, they'll know what sacrifice is, because everything comes easy. And nothing
exactly.
Don't come. I mean, if you don't want this, if you don't want to go any further out, there's another thing I want to recommend. You know, change our behaviors. I mean, the brother that told me, which he has a show on Saturday night, we got to change our behaviors. You know, we cannot go like in Atlanta, right? A lot of people are moving to counties that used to be dominated by white folks, and the white folks will come to Atlanta because, you know, the theater, there's more things to do than on the outskirts. And now you're seeing carjackings out there. You're seeing gang violence out there. Like, what? Isn't that the suburbs?
Yeah, because that's where they moved to.
And like Michonne said, you know, who wants to live around that? Like Carlton said, who wants to live around that type of behavior? And now, you know, the black professionals that I spoke of earlier, they gonna find a way to come back to at this where you create multicultural communities. And how can we separate if we still have these behaviors? How can we have where we have these behaviors?
You know what? You got to do research also, because I know, like, in St. Louis, and I'm only an hour and a half from St. Louis, where I'm at, they were they had houses that were abandoned and things like that, and they were selling them for $1. They sold you the house for $1, you have to live in the house. They were even giving people loans to fix the houses.
Right. Yeah.
And
you're right. 5 years.
But
$1. That's a great strategy. Did black folks take advantage of that in East St. Louis?
Some of them actually did. I have cousins in East St. Louis around those areas, because East St. Louis and St. Louis is just a bridge. You just cross a bridge over to Missouri from Illinois. I have family members who's buying 5 and 6 and 7 and got 10 houses apiece.
Right.
Because the property associate, they're buying it up, but the rent is still high.
Right.
But they're buying. But I know a lot of people that are buying up a lot of property. My brother is buying up property. He has his own business, a construction company, and he's buying up stuff, tax sales, everything, getting it cheap. So we have my daughter just brought one here. She doesn't even live here anymore. I mean, so there's a lot of people in our family that's buying up all kind of stuff. I got a lot of relatives in Michigan. They're buying up houses in Detroit. They're buying up everything. They have houses. So there are quite a few people that I personally know.
But we need more of
that.
Because people ain't buying up property in Rochester or Buffalo. I mean, we're doing the same old thing that we did in Bed-Stuy in Harlem and the Bronx, the South Bronx. You know, people ain't buying. I mean, they're not buying up the property in Atlanta, but they're buying up the properties where they're moving to. So I think that there's some
of
us all learning from our mistakes.
And most of them have their own business. Half of my siblings own their own businesses. So there's a
That's
lot
another
of people
key
that
too.
I know that are doing things.
Yeah, and we got to start. And from ownership, we got to start doing businesses with each other like other cultures do. You know? Well,
exactly.
Thank you for coming on the show. And folks, we only got a minute and a half left. And I just want to thank everybody, and I'd like to thank my brother from calling from New Orleans. I want to thank everybody for listening. And remember, this is a serious issue, and it is not stopping. This is a continuation. It's getting ready to happen in Inglewood, California. They get ready to get displaced because they're building a new stadium. All right, Sean, what's happening tomorrow?
Well, I'm going to be talking about this mess with Trump. You know, he's saying he's going to be back in office by August.
In August,
so
right.
I guess they planning something big to get him back in office, you know. He's out there.
I never heard anything like this before.
I heard it a couple of days ago. The QAnon folk and his party saying he's going to be reinstated
and
in August.
Supporters. Yeah, so they planning something. Yeah. So, don't be discussing it.
Okay, y'all. That's a
wrap.
All right. I like to say, as always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night. All
right.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised.